Hello, Park Street. Good morning and welcome back. Today is day 37 of Lent, and I am here recording with the Pope of the Brethren Church, freshly minted Dr. Stephen Cole.
Yes, so, how exciting that is.
So thank you, Stephen, for joining me to record. I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Can you give people, a background of your ministry in the Brethren Church and how long you've been in Ashland and coming to Park Street?
Oh, sure. Yeah, as far as the Brethren Church goes, I've pastored a Brethren Church in Manteca, California for 8 years from 2007 to 2015 and was there. And in 2015, we applied for and were affirmed by the conference to be the executive director of the denomination. And so we packed up our bags and moved to Ashland, Ohio in August of 2015. So we're coming up on the end of 4 years here in July, August, when we were affirmed and then bought the house and started coming in. So
and you've also lived in, I believe, Georgia and Texas as well as California.
I've lived in Georgia, Texas, New Mexico, California, and Ohio. So I've lived in 5 states.
So cool. And is you were at the church where Miles Larson is now pastoring?
Correct. So Miles Larson is pastoring Northgate Community, where I was pastor before.
Cool. So some people who are listening to this may know Miles. And I know Miles was my RD in college. So.
Oh, I love Miles to death. He's great. I can't imagine what it would be like to be living with him as your resident advisor.
We had fun. There were some good stories.
I'm sure.
For another time and place.
Yeah, Lent conversations. Maybe right. Not. That's good.
So today's passage, we're going to read John chapter 18. Verses 28 through the end of the chapter, which is verse 40. So would you mind reading it?
No problem. So then the Jewish leaders took Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning, and to avoid ceremonial uncleanliness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man? If he were not a criminal," they replied, we would not have handed him over to you." Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law. We have no right to execute anyone," they objected. This took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death he was going to die. Pilate then went back into the palace, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is this your own idea?" Jesus asked, "or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it you have done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If I were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," he said. Pilate said. Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king, and in fact the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" retorted Pilate. With this he went on out again to the Jews, gathered them, and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him, but it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Now Barabbas had taken part in an uprising.
Thanks for reading, Stephen. Appreciate it. I guess when I look at this, there's two kind of basic sections. The first section is the Jewish leaders bringing Jesus to Pilate, and there's an interaction there. And then there's an interaction between Pilate and Jesus. Which one do you find, I guess, interaction would you want to start discussing first?
Let's start with Caiaphas and Pilate, then, and understand why and what is going on there.
So yesterday's recording, Jesus was brought to the Jewish high priest, which is Caiaphas, and now he's the Jews have moved him up the political food chain to Pilate, who is the Roman ruler of the area.
Right,
and they bring him. They bring Jesus out, and Pilate wants to know, what's the charge against this man? And it's interesting, I guess, in verse 30, they don't particularly answer what the charge is, but they just assure Pilate that he's a criminal.
Yeah, right. Why would we bring you an innocent person? Why do you even ask us these questions? And, in the Pilate and Caiaphas, if I remember right, Pilate has been running the city for a while. I don't think Pilate's new to the area when this happens. So Pilate and Caiaphas, and Caiaphas is, I've read quite a bit of the 18, 19, and 20. I'm not sure where we were going to go today. And I believe Caiaphas is only high chief priest for a year at a time. I think the chief priests run 1 year terms. But Caiaphas and or the high priest, whoever it is, and a person like Pilate have to work together and have been working together for a while to deal with uprisings, to deal with peace in their city, to deal with the fact that they are occupied by Rome and you don't want to be, you know, hurt or be crushed by your occupiers. So it's not surprising that Caiaphas and Pilate are having an interaction here that seems more, I mean, just that the whole idea, like if this person, if the governor of your state came to you, would you give him a slight sideways answer to a question that he asks you, right?
Right.
Or you've known him for a while, and so therefore you can give him a sideways answer because
you've already done this before.
Yeah, you've been there. You've been here before, right?
Well, and it seems like Pilate kind of wants to just kind of kick the can back, you know, or hit the ball across back to them and say, put the ball back in their court, say, just take them away and judge them by your own law.
Right.
And just like, I don't want to deal with this. You know?
I don't want to spoil it for somebody tomorrow, but Pilate's afraid.
That's true. We're reading about half of the interaction of Jesus and Pilate.
Right. But Pilate's afraid.
Yeah.
And so Pilate wants to kick it down the road. He wants to kick it to anybody but himself.
Well, and I think he wants to make sure that nothing violent's going to happen that's going to attract the attention of his bosses, right? But as long as he can not deal with the issue, he was pleased to not deal with it.
Right. Yeah, so as you deal with Jerusalem at this moment, it's swollen, it's full of thousands and thousands of people who don't live there. The last thing you need...
It's a powder keg of sorts.
Right. The last thing you need is... I mean, my gosh, can you imagine poor Pilate's mood when he sees Caiaphas coming, like, please not today. Like, can we get through the weekend before you knock on my door again? And the answer is no.
Yeah. Well, and once they say that we're here because we want to execute this guy and we need you to do that for us, then all of a sudden he goes back into his headquarters, which, you know, he's kind of like, okay, gets himself together, and then he calls Jesus in. And he asks him right away, are you the king of the Jews?
Right.
Which is kind of an interesting question, you know. And Jesus replies in total Jesus fashion with his own question, you know.
Right.
Is this your own question, or did others tell you about me? And then Pilate comes back with another question. Am I a Jew? You know, your own people and lead priests brought you to me for trial. What have you done?
Right.
And then Jesus kind of finally does get around to answering the question about him being a king. In verse 36, you know, he says, my kingdom is not an earthly kingdom. If it were, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over. But my kingdom is not of this world. You know, so he kind of does answer the question to Pilate. He kind of says, I am a king, but I'm not really the kind of king you're worried about crushing.
Right. Well, in this first interaction in 34, where he 33 and 34 ask him about being the Jews. So clearly, there's more being told to Pilate than is recorded here.
Mm-hmm.
Why would he even remotely ask a question of a common criminal? He isn't asking every criminal who comes to his door, hey, are you king of the Jews today? No, I mean, so clearly there's more conversation that has happened somewhere. Because if you go back to the beginning, really, did they just show up at the palace at the beginning of the day?
It says, the early hours
of
the morning.
So either they told him in the interaction on the porch while they were waiting, because they didn't want to go inside, or there's been more conversation about this. There's been a bigger, you know, thing going on. And I don't remember if Pilate shows up in John before this.
I think this is the first time.
This is the first time that he's in Pilate. So, but Jesus has been on the scene for, are we in day 4 or 5 of the week now?
Yeah.
Of the Holy Week? We're in day 4 or 5, right?
Yep.
So, surely this has come across his desk already.
He probably should have been aware of Jesus. I mean, there's been throughout the whole book of John, there's constant, you know, he's definitely has a reputation. People are aware of him. He's done miracles. it in verses or chapters 11 and 12, when Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, it kind of talks about, you know, his fame, and there are Greeks coming to want to get meetings with Jesus, and the chief priests are like, he's attracting way too much attention. If we don't get rid of this guy, you know, the Roman Empire is going to come and destroy our temple and destroy our way of life. And so I would have assumed Pilate would likely have heard of Jesus, or at least maybe been aware that there was some kind of conflict going on in his territory.
You don't have Palm Sunday and what happens on Palm Sunday with this person riding on this donkey coming in and everybody in the city going, oh my gosh, there's Hosanna. Like they sing out this is a kingly entrance.
Right.
So whether Caiaphas told him that he says here, of course he's not a criminal. Of course he's a criminal. We're bringing him to you. This idea that he has broken the law of claiming to be the Son of God is the thing that has caught Pilate's attention. And maybe that's what you're afraid of. Are you afraid that you're actually going to kill the Son of God? Like that, is that surely what Pilate is afraid of?
Well, you're right. He does seem to be afraid. At least in this particular passage, and I guess this is a good point. We have cut the passage. You know, when I went and divvied up the book into 40 different sections,
sure.
We kept the Holy Week sections pretty short because of just the timing of the week and how it played out. But you're right. In tomorrow's episode, there is going to be more between Pilate and Jesus that he starts to get. You know, in chapter 19, it says tomorrow. Oh, in verse 8, John 19:8. When Pilate heard this, he was more frightened than ever. So in verse 7, the Jewish leaders say, by our law, he ought to die because he called himself the Son of God.
Right.
And then Pilate hears that and he's like terrified because he is realizing that like maybe this guy is different.
Right.
Aren't the other Gospels, aren't there accounts of, you know, Pilate's wife has a nightmare about Jesus?
Yes. And where that, how that weaves into 18 or 19 and where it falls in the chronological order, I'm not quite sure. But yes, like she is, I think she's even more superstitious and, you know, and understanding the gods and all the Roman world
mythology
and that. She's even more superstitious than Pilate is. And I think she's even more freaked out by her what her husband might be possibly getting himself tangled up in here. So I think he very clearly, as we can see in the two sections, the front half of John chapter 18 and the back half of John chapter 18, like I have an out, please let me have it. Verse 39, but it is your custom for me to release you to you one of these prisoners at the time of Passover. Please, do you want me to release? Why at that point can't he just say, I'm releasing?
Well, he has a problem because he realizes if he releases him back to the Jews, they might cause the very uprising he's starting to be concerned of. So on the one hand, if he just lets Jesus go, they're going to be upset and he's going to make enemies and he might have he might have a riot. On the other hand, he's terrified that he can't really... He knows that Jesus isn't a violent threat,
right.
So he's not worried that Jesus is going to cause any other problems. So,
but the irony is, who does he release?
Well, that's. I'm glad you brought that up,
right?
Because he brings together these two. There's two characters, right? Jesus and then Barabbas,
right?
And obviously they're different. You know, Jesus is not really given any hint that his kingdom is a violent overthrow of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And Barabbas is the guy who is, you know, a violent, trying to overthrow Rome.
Right.
And it's interesting who the Jews, they choose, right? Which kingdom do they want to be a part of? Jesus talks about his kingdom in verse 36 being, you know, not an earthly kingdom.
Right.
And it's interesting, especially in today's political climate. I was thinking about this today, right? Like the idea that this whole chapter is very, I mean, Pilate's a political ruler. He's a political figure. Mm-hmm. Jesus is saying, you know, my kingdom is not an earthly kingdom. I'm not here to seize political power by force. And there's still this tension between, right, us as followers of Christ and how we interact with the political sphere and our desire to, you know, on the one hand, right, we probably, there's part of good citizenship and just, you know, love of country and all that stuff that would require you to participate in the political system and to try to make it better. On the other hand, there's a temptation to try and use the political system to gain power, you know, and to try to make things happen through that justification. And Jesus is kind of saying, like, that's not really what I'm about. If I was about that, I would fight to keep me from being handed over. But
that is,
my kingdom is separate from this whole political structure that's here, and you can follow me, and you don't have to be trying to overthrow the current system.
Right.
You know?
I really love that, because, I mean, Jesus has disciples. One of his disciples, I believe, is named Simon the Zealot.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest, that's what Barabbas was.
Yeah.
Barabbas was a zealot. He was... You know, I don't know which one of the Jesus movies that I've probably seen them all, most likely, right? Pastors watch all Jesus movies. And just the, maybe it was The Passion of the Christ. I don't remember which one. But Barabbas was almost viewed as a crazy person.
Yeah.
Like this.
Like insanely violent and angry, like just crazy. Yeah.
Right. But why were people in Jewish time of Jesus zealots? To kick out their oppressor, the one who, you know, I mean, before Rome takes over, and it's the Greeks, they violate the temple.
Yeah.
Like these zealots that rise up, and they're doing God's work. It's not like Barabbas was a crazy man who just was this devil-filled. I mean, how is Simon the Zealot and Barabbas any different? And they're probably not a ton different. But then Jesus says, like, I mean, clearly Jesus knows, hey, I've got servants who's got swords, right? We actually, like, we know that's true.
Right.
Because Peter's going to...
read that part
of
the book.
Right.
Yeah.
And, but he says, I would have had them already. We wouldn't be having this kind of meeting if I was going to have that kind of kingdom.
Yeah. And that's just an interesting, you know, as we kind of go through another, I mean, the presidential cycle has already started back up, and it's going to be it's going to be another year and a half of just a lot of trying to grab political power. And I hope that as a church, we can take a step back to realize, and I don't have any necessarily right answers on how to involve ourselves in politics. I think Christians should be involved in politics, but there's a specific way of involving yourself in politics and that is honoring to God in a way that's not. And I hope we can navigate that as well as possible. It is interesting that Pilate's very, you know, he's trying to get Jesus released. I mean, I don't know if he's really, I guess he's probably not that scared of Barabbas either. I mean, Rome was very good at putting down threats. I don't think he was really worried about Barabbas overthrowing his power. But
the peace, have Pax Romano.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Which is basically peace through strength.
Right.
Right, we'll dominate you. That's how we'll have peace here.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. You're right, there's an interesting, just kind of, there's these two characters could not be more different. And, you know, the religious leaders are you know, I choose Barabbas over Jesus. And the two quotes of Jesus, you know, my kingdom is not an earthly kingdom. And then he says, you know, basically in verse 37, all who love truth recognize what I say is true. And just this idea that Jesus, you know, calls himself the way, the truth, and the life, and that he is, the things he is saying, his claims to be God, his claims to be, you know, we call him the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. I mean, he's in this interaction with Pilate. He has authority. He's claimed his whole, you know, life to have authority over Pilate, you know, and yet, and here he is, you know, talking to Pilate, and using this kind of language about, you know, all who love the truth recognize what I say is true.
Right.
And that's part of what Jesus does to people is he people are forced throughout the book to decide if they're going to believe or recognize the truth or reject the truth.
Right.
And Pilate has that choice.
Which is great, right? He has a great postmodern retort. What is truth? Right?
Yeah.
What is truth? What a great question that is.
But you know, Jesus is kind of inviting Pilate to say, look, like I'm inviting you to believe, you know, like you have a choice of how you're going to respond to me, just like the Jewish leaders who arrested me and handed me to you have the choice on how to respond. So it is definitely, there's a lot of interesting little things going on here. And I guess you're right. We'll read a little bit more tomorrow about, you know, what happens and how Pilate tries to continue to navigate this situation. Mm-hmm. But he's definitely, doesn't know what he's quite going to do at this point.
Yeah, and I agree, and I like the what you say about there's presentation of two kingdoms, and you have two characters, three characters really, that represent the two kingdoms, right? Jesus is definitely representing his kingdom and what it means of not being of this world, and it's not a violent kingdom. But then you have both Pilate and Barabbas who represent this violent kingdom, and they're the two sides of that one coin, right? You have the occupiers and the people who are being oppressed,
right?
And their whole lives, their whole experiences have been shaped by being oppressed.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, it's like there's a saying, right? New boss, same as the old boss. It's like Pilate's in charge. You know, if he's overthrown by somebody through force, they have the same kind of qualities and right. character of their rule that Pilate had. And, right. you know, when Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world, you know, I think that means that it's not the same quality of this world. I'm a different kind of king. And I have a different kind of kingdom. And it's not the same cycle of tyrants and swords and killing and oppression and violence and slavery.
Yeah, and Jesus talks about that, right? He talks about that a lot. And man, we could wax a long time talking about the what is the Christian reaction to war, to power, to control. How do Christians respond to that? And you know, the brethren had a great response prior to 1883. We just removed ourselves from society.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't fight.
Yeah.
You didn't run for office. You managed your family and you lived a life of simplicity. That was our answer to that. But we don't have quite a simple answer as we used to.
Yeah.
About those things. And so if a simple life and a life of service is still an example we can live by, how do you live a life of peace, a life of non-violence in a world full of, I mean, this world was full of violence too.
Right.
I mean, so much so, if you just read John through, I think the nonchalant behaviors about, hey, this person is not guilty, I would like to release them. Hey, this person's not guilty, I would like to release them. After he beats Jesus in the top of 19, he says, this person's not guilty, I would like to release him.
Right.
You beat an innocent person?
Yeah.
Man, at least in our understanding of kingdom in America, I know that there are innocent people beaten on a regular basis, but it's not quite as nonchalant as that.
Well, that's, I mean, how the political system works, right? You're trying to placate all these different forces, and the reason you're doing that is because you want to keep the status quo in running as long as you can. I mean, Pilate was in charge, right? At least of his little world. I mean, he had people probably that were above him, right?
Oh, sure. Well, you have Caesar, right? Caesar. I don't know how many pecking order people there were between him and Caesar.
He had at least made it up the food chain to the where he was benefiting from the current system. And so, you know, you start to care more about, right? If you beating Jesus, you know, hopefully that'll be enough for the Jews to kind of, you know, like literally take their pound of flesh, right? And be done. But, you know, as it turns out, that wasn't enough. And so he was, when he came to that, you know, decision point, right, he, even the washing of his hands, right, to get rid of saying, hey, I'm not really making this call. I'm not really the one making this decision.
Right.
It's you guys.
Right.
He's still trying to navigate that. He's trying to keep himself as, you know, and that's what politicians do, right? They want to try to make as many people happy as possible, and they want to be able to, you know, say they don't want to be pinned down necessarily to any really big decisions in case those decisions turn out to not work out, you know.
I mean, what a tough dance that is, because as soon as it turns out, you want to take all the credit.
Well, right.
Right? Like, if it comes out okay, if Jesus doesn't rise from the dead, so be it, whatever. Just another day, another dead person.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
But you have to be able to try to navigate the fact where it becomes plausible for you to take the credit if it does work out, but it also, you have somebody else to blame if it doesn't go right.
So right.
And it just, you know, obviously there's a lot of problems with trying to rule with that kind of, you know, I guess lack of integrity and lack of principle, right?
So, right.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting passage for sure today. We are going to read a little bit more about Jesus and Pilate tomorrow, but
good.
Stephen, thank you for taking some time to think about this passage and chat about it with me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right.
All right.
Thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow.